Recording in progress.
So,
hi everybody.
It's wonderful to see you folks. Welcome. And yeah, just about set to get started. And so as we get started, just welcome everyone here to Heart of Freedom. I'm Doug Pullen. It's a pleasure to have this chance to share the Dharma with you this evening. And so just to share that we at BIMC are really committed to making the exploration of Dharma practice and teachings accessible and relevant to everybody. So to welcome everyone of all ages, ethnicities, cultural backgrounds, heritage, religion, socioeconomic groups, sexual orientations, gender identities. So just in this way, following in the footsteps of the Buddha, who offered these teachings of awakening freely and openly. So yeah, welcome. And looks like there's a few more folks here ready to join us. Yeah. And just checking to make sure that the sound is working okay. Is everybody getting this loud and clear? Wonderful. Good. Yeah. It's important. Yeah. So to continue with the theme of welcoming, let's find a comfortable position that we can welcome ourselves into, welcoming ourselves into the present, welcoming ourselves into the space of community and connection to the earth that we can feel through our sitting spot here, through connection with contact. Connection with the warmth, the coolness, the pressure, the tingling. All of those body sensations that let us know that there is this aliveness that's present. And as we do that, setting aside preoccupations, cares, concerns about the past or the future, so that we can really come to rest here in the space of safety that's only found in the present. And to make this a safe space, to start with an intention of kindness. So everything in our intention is around being awake and present with kindness and accepting this moment just as it is. So as we get more comfortable and kind of explore what's here, to take that as an invitation. So as we settle in, if there's places where we feel tension or constriction or tightness, perhaps it's possible to just to let that soften a little bit. To let the breath help to soften and bring some ease into this body. And there might be particular places where we feel that constriction or tension or tightness. For example, neck and shoulders often are places where we tend to be burdened with stress and tension. So giving some good attention there, or the face, the area around the forehead and the eyes sometimes can be holding emotional energy or tension or tightness. And so just giving yourself this opportunity to really check in and to see if there's more welcoming to different aspects of this mind and body that can happen. So we bring a sense of ease and openness to our experience of sitting here. And then as we settle in, if it seems like it would be helpful to take a couple of long, slow, deep breaths, just letting the breath be like a mini massage from the inside, just inviting through accentuating the breath to let the body soften. And there's this kind of balancing between softening and ease, and sitting in a way that's alert and supports the practice of being awake. So there's this balancing there with that. And to start with this evening, I'd like to invite us just to reflect briefly, taking refuge, and to take refuge in the capacity to be awake, to be alert and present. It'd be traditionally thought of as taking refuge in the Buddha, that capacity, the seeds of awakening that are right here in this moment. To reflect on what it might mean to take refuge in the truth, the truth that can be discovered from our own direct investigation and curiosity. So taking refuge in the Dharma. And what does it mean to take refuge in love? To take refuge in interbeing, interconnectedness, in our mutual support, traditionally referred to as taking refuge in Sangha. And it's always coming back to presence, back to this moment, this breath. And in this practice of Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, which is a wonderful place to start, it's the practice of letting the breath be free, letting the breath breathe itself, but staying intimately connected with the sensations of breathing. So discovering in this moment where it is that we know that the breath is happening. So it's outside of concepts and ideas, but right here with the expansion and contraction of the chest, or the rising and falling of the belly, perhaps the touch of the breath at the tip of the nostrils. So it's simple. If it isn't simple, it probably is something other than mindfulness. So it's the simplicity of coming back to this moment, to this experience of breathing in, breathing out. It's the simplicity of recognizing thinking as thinking, of noticing feelings as feelings, and body sensations as body sensations. Sometimes there's a tendency to make it more complicated than it needs to be. See if it's possible to just relax into this simplicity, this moment, this breath, to place your faith or trust in this ancient practice, to see if it's possible to really just let this moment be enough. just this moment, just this experience. So sometimes mindfulness is translated from the word sati in Pali to mean remembering, the practice of recollection, to remember our true nature is right here in this moment when things are like this. We can be present when life is like this. Nothing needs to be different in order for awakening to happen. In fact, awakening is always found right here when things are like this. So that includes whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, whether the mind is agitated, restless, sleepy, dull, or angry, or it's peaceful, calm, concentrated, lots of equanimity. Awakening includes all of it. So we take the breath as our anchor, as our touchstone. That helps us remember really what we already know. So there's a simple invitation with this practice to free our sense of identification from conceptual overlays and frames of reference, to come fully directly into the present moment and discover for ourselves what's true. And so it can be a little disorienting, but it's stepping back from trying to figure it out analytically, intellectually, and actually coming to trust what we discover in the present moment. It's the space before thinking. This is the space of mindful presence. So in just a moment, you'll probably hear the sound of the bell. And please be invited to be fully present with hearing as a mindfulness object, and to hear that as an invitation to continue to practice in perhaps a more expanded sort of opening to the rest of this evening, to really take the thread of mindful presence and weave it through the rest of our evening together, and perhaps beyond. It's wonderful to see all of you folks here this evening. Please take this as an invitation, this transition, to be kind to the body. So we've been sitting for a while. If it seems helpful to do a minute or two of a little stretching or movement, feel free to take that as your practice. And I'll share a few brief announcements and reminders. And yeah, so maybe we can notice going back and forth between hearing and body sensation, or whatever else is the most predominant experience that's happening. So just a reminder that PIMC operates on your generosity, on all of our generosity. And this evening is sponsored by all of us. And if you'd like to participate in continuing to make the teachings possible and for them to flourish, you're invited to do so. I posted in the chat a little description of the practice of Dana, and then some other information there that you might be interested in. So you could take a look there. And then I'd also like to just call to your attention some upcoming offerings at PIMC. There's a lot going on. So I'm just going to mention things briefly and invite you to go to portlandinsight.org to get more information. So coming up this weekend is a retreat with Kendall Summers. It's called Shining the Light of the Dharma. It's from 10 to 4 this Saturday, December 2nd. And then coming up on December 16th, Kendall and Phyllis Moses are offering the Winter Solstice Meditation. That's also from 10 to 4. And then on solstice itself, Heart of Freedom will be coming to in-person and Zoom at PIMC for the 21st at 7 p.m. Notice the change of time. It's going to be starting at 7 on that Thursday evening. That'll be in the living room at PIMC and on Zoom. And then want to just give a shout out to Trina, who is going to be offering Wake Up Together at 6:30 to 7:30 online in the mornings during the week. And then Tuesday evenings from 6 to 7:30 in person and online Tapasana group at PIMC. So those are just a few things coming up. Look for more on the PIMC website. So I thought I'd give us a chance to do a little check-in this evening before I dive into the Dharma talk. And these check-ins, these community check-ins, are totally optional, no tyranny of the group. But if you'd like to share a few words about what's most alive for you this evening, you're more than welcome. It's wonderful if you'd like to say your name. And then when you're finished, just say, I have spoken, or I've finished, so that lets the next person know that they can take a turn. So, and just to keep it so that there's a kind of a safe space for sharing, I ask that we not engage in crosstalk during the sharing. So we really look at it as a practice opportunity for deep listening and sharing from the heart. So I'll start. My name is Doug, and my heart is full this evening. I'm feeling some sadness just with my siblings. Earlier this evening, decided to have a conversation with my mom, who has congestive heart failure, to start her in a hospice program. And so I'm just feeling the grief of that, and it feels really good here to be with you and community and support. So so thank you all for being here, and I have spoken.
Hi, I'm Laura. Doug, I've also spent a last weekend with my siblings talking about my mother and how to approach her about some things. She's losing a lot of her independence, and it seems to be happening quite quickly. And I had thought I was doing better, but when you it was a bit hard. And I had thought I was doing better, and but you know, when I think about it, I think I'm carrying around a fair bit of grief from that too. I've been meditating on it and taking time, and I think I'm doing everything I need to. But there's a weight there, a sadness, and glad I'm here and. And that's it. I'm finished. Thank
you. I'm Esme. I'm just holding a lot of fear for my safety as a trans person in this country. It's basically what I'm practicing with these days. Glad to be here with all of you tonight. Thank you. I've spoken.
I'm Mel. Sorry. That's my other end of the echoes going on. I just want to share that I lost my dad almost 10 years ago now to congestive heart failure. So just sending lots of loving kindness to you, Doug. I was just yesterday in choir. We were singing a song about how the words were something like, how much my life has changed just having you in my life. And I just burst out crying thinking about my dad. It's been almost 10 years, but it's still, there's lots of grief there, and I miss him a whole lot. So he was on my heart tonight. Thank you. For sure.
This is Charlene, and I sent an email to my mother earlier today because I feel like she doesn't do the right things for her health, for her care, for her well-being. And so I try to think of a new approach to motivate her, like she'll be sick that she'll cancel an appointment because she feels too sick to go to the doctor. So of course she doesn't start getting better. And but after I do such things, I just feel bad, like I've been judgmental, like I've been disrespectful, like I've been unloving. And so I second guess a lot and wish I hadn't. I'll send an email or something and say, Mom, if you won't go, I'll send you the cab fare, but you're never going to get better if you don't do this. And then I feel like that didn't come out in a loving way. So I'm really kind of struggling with this. So I have spoken. Thank you.
Keegan, and I recently got out of a really depressed state where I wanted to kill myself. And whenever I get out of that state, I feel like my brain doesn't work anymore. Like I don't know what's going on. And it feels very vulnerable, but also like I feel very connected to people because it feels like my sense of self is constantly being like shattered, if that makes any sense. I also appreciate how vulnerable this group is.
Hi, this is Emily. I wanted to say thank you for this space. I feel a lot of gratitude. I have shared.
So I am just checking to see if anybody's on the edge of sharing anything that needs to be shared before we move into the Dharma talk. Yeah, there'll probably be more time afterwards. We can circle back. So thank you for the sharing. And so this evening I'm starting a series of talks that focuses on something referred to in the Buddhist teachings as the five spiritual faculties or powers. And I'll go through and describe what those are briefly and then dive into the first one. I'd like to start with a poem from Kabir. Kabir was I believe a 12th century Sufi poet. And this poem is called The Revolution. There is nothing but water in the holy pools. I know I've been swimming in them. All the gods sculpted of wood and ivory can't say a word. I know I've been crying out to them. The sacred books of the East are nothing but words. I look through their covers one day sideways. What Kabir talks about is only what he, she, they have lived through. If you haven't lived through something, it isn't true. So this teaching comes from the Pali Canon, which are the suttas of the Buddhist teachings, kind of the original teachings. And there's a sutta called the Patika Sutta, where the Buddha talked about these five spiritual powers. And so their faith or conviction, energy or effort, persistence. That's the second one. The third one is mindfulness, or it could be translated, like I was saying during the guided meditation, as recollection or memory. The fourth one is concentration or focus. And then the fifth one is wisdom, understanding, comprehension. So the word faith doesn't necessarily land well for a lot of people in our culture. So I just wanted to invite that to the surface, if that's there. If there's any connotations with a faith practice of your childhood that has unresolved issues or brings up discomfort, to notice that, to be mindful of that, and to listen for how it might be different, this word faith in this context in the Buddhist teaching. So yeah, to see. And if faith doesn't work for you, perhaps the word confidence or conviction would work better. So maybe you could auto-translate for something that isn't maybe triggering, if the word faith is triggering for you. So faith in this tradition can function as a kind of a motor or energy source, which propels us forward in practice. And it becomes synergistic and gathers energy as we practice. Here's a couple of quotes from Buddhist scholars that I find interesting and kind of inspirational. And see, notice how this might land for you. So the first is from Stephen Batchelor, and he takes a kind of agnostic approach to the Dharma, meaning that you really don't have to believe anything, but trust your own experience. He wrote a book called Buddhism Without Beliefs. He said, faith is not equivalent to mere belief. faith is the condition of ultimate confidence, then we have the capacity to follow the path of doubt to its end. So faith in Buddhist understanding isn't the opposite of doubt. Faith is embracing doubt with mindfulness and wise reflection. It's bringing doubt to wise counsel. That's Stephen Batchelor. So doubt isn't the enemy. Doubt is one of the hindrances, the five hindrances, but it's only a hindrance if it's unexplored, if we don't investigate it, because it could be there for a good reason. So if there's questions or uncertainties, it isn't in this practice to reject those or to see that as a flaw in our practice, but more to see it as an invitation. So, and then here's a quote from Alan Watts. Alan Watts was a kind of early translator of Eastern practice, particularly Buddhism, to the West. He said, belief is the insistence that the truth is what we want or wish it to be. Faith is an unreserved opening of the mind to the truth, whatever it may turn out to be. Faith has no preconceptions. It's a plunge into the unknown. Belief clings, but faith lets go. Faith is the essential virtue of science and likewise of any religion that isn't self-deception. It's interesting, back about 10 or 15 years ago, maybe it was longer, the Dalai Lama said, if modern science proved something wrong or inaccurate in the Dharma, in the Buddhist teachings, then the teachings would have to change, which is an interesting perspective. So far, I don't think that's happened, for the most part. So this practice, the core of this practice that we're doing, is based on seeing, knowing, and understanding directly from our own experience, with cultivation of the capacity to do that, the cultivation of mindfulness and concentration and qualities of heart, compassion, loving kindness, equanimity, altruistic joy. And this quality of faith arises from that practice. It arises out of trust in the direct experience of our true nature, which is never broken. Any belief system that has as a tenet that we're flawed in some way, in my experience, doesn't withstand the scrutiny of investigation. But that's just my experience, and I invite you to discover that for yourself. There isn't in terms of deities, belief in a deity, in order to practice in this tradition, you don't have to believe in any deity, god, goddess, higher power, but you also don't need to not believe in those things. The practice can work for you regardless of what your belief system is, because fundamentally it isn't about what we believe. It's about what we discover. So getting into conflicts about belief systems or religions, at least in this practice, in this tradition, is an anathema. It doesn't make any sense. So, you know, and this, at the same time, of course, we can understand how people feel passionate about their belief systems. But we can also see how much suffering it causes in the world. And for some of us, maybe a lot of people are drawn to practices like this because we've been injured in some way from belief systems. So, so the training is really to help us to come directly into presence with the way things are. And that's beyond our conceptual overlays or belief systems. So what is it that we actually notice if we show up or really here in the present? And what does that do? What does that lead to? In my experience, it leads to peace and freedom. Leads to a sense of openness and inclusivity. Freedom from the mind's conditioning, from the mind's biases and judgments. It leads to happiness. And to the degree that that's true, even a little bit, even a little taste of that engenders faith or a sense of confidence that it actually works. It makes a difference. And for those of us who've been practicing for a while, most of the time, folks don't stay with this practice unless they have a taste of that. And sometimes it's more than just a taste of that. That there's a transformative experience that happens. That there's this sense of deep confidence. And so for me, at this stage, there really isn't any doubt that this works. I speak from direct experience. And that's what keeps me going, really. And so regardless of what the mind says, whatever comes up as far as conditioning, there's a faith or belief in something that's beyond thought, that's beyond belief, conditioning, emotional states, mental states. So anyway, that's my own personal experience. And there's another sutta that is important when we talk about faith. That is partly what cinched the deal for me in terms of Buddhist practice that really made me committed to this practice. And it's called the Kalamba Sutta. And so I know many of you are familiar with this, so I'm not going to go into detail, but just really to remind us that in the Buddhist teachings, he wandered from village to village, and he came to this village of the Kalamas, and they were religious seekers themselves, and they were bewildered by the plethora of divergent philosophies back in his day, 2600 years ago. India was a veritable smorgasbord of spiritual practices. I know I'm mixing metaphors and cultures there, but but you get the idea. It was an incredibly rich environment. Lots of things happening. And so when the Buddha showed up, they said to him, so, you know, what our experience is here, we have these teachers coming through, and they're all saying that theirs is the right way. And they diss and put down the previous teacher who just came through. And so who should we believe? And so the Buddha said to them, and this is actually a translation from the sutta, yes, Kalamas, it's proper that you have doubt, that you have perplexity, for a doubt has arisen in a matter that is doubtful. So here's his advice to them. Don't be led by reports, tradition, hearsay, or the authority of religious texts, nor by mere logic or inference, nor by considering appearances or speculative opinions. Just a side note here, opinions are like belly buttons. Everybody's got one. And a lot of people are willing to share them with you about things that they don't know much about. And there's a lot of that going on these days. Back to the Buddha. But, O Kalamas, when you know for yourself that certain things are unwholesome, that they're wrong, that they're bad, and they lead to bad outcomes, then give them up. When you know for yourself that certain things are wholesome, good, and lead to the good for yourself and for the many, then those are the true practices. Go do that. So, Buddha didn't say, believe me, trust me. He said, trust yourself and look at what the outcomes are. Essentially, taking a scientific perspective, what leads to a good outcome for yourself and others? And, you know, what's in, and how I would translate that into our current sort of understanding, what are your deepest values and beliefs? What are the things that are the most important in life? And does what you see happening support those, both internally and externally? And with mindfulness, we start to have a choice about what we act on. So emotional conditioning, discursive thinking, random thoughts, mental states may or may not be the best guides for action. So what do we place faith in? What do we follow? There's a lot in our culture these days of using fear and emotional manipulation and speaking untruths as a way to manipulate power and use power over people. And what makes the practice of faith in Buddhism powerful is that it starts to free us from those kinds of influences that can be misleading and corrupting, that may not direct us in a way that leads to the best outcome for ourselves and others, for our culture, for the world. So to look at that. So the Buddha strongly advocated a self-reliance, a practice of discipline to develop our minds and hearts so that we can actually become truly human and act in a world, in the world in a way that is compassionate and kind and wise. So that's what we can take faith in, is that those practices, whatever practice leads in that direction. And it's a practice of ultimately inviting us to trust that we have that capacity. And circling back to Alan Watts, he said, if you cannot trust yourself, you cannot even trust your mistrust of yourself. So that without this underlying trust in the whole system of nature, you're simply paralyzed. And so in this practice, we recognize that being human is inexorably intertwined with everything, with nature. We're not separate. So if we believe the story that we can't trust ourselves, that's a story that's disconnected from the truth, ultimately. So before his passing, the Buddha is remembered to have said, be a refuge unto yourself. And why is that after 45 years of teaching? Those were the final words that he uttered. Why didn't he advise everyone to find salvation through him? What he meant is that we can't really find salvation by depending on others, because that's giving our power away. And there's way too much of that. And so it's really a power to the people message, to empower ourselves. So develop confidence in ourselves. And that's part of the reason why the Four Noble Truths are called noble, ennobling, because it's an invitation to discover our nobility. You know, in nobility, in like European culture, refers to like the noble lords, those landed gentry who had power and control over other people. And here's a reclaiming of that that word to bring it into the masses, to the people, and say, no, it's right here, it's in all of us. We all have nobility. We all have power that can set us free. So, and here's another example from another teacher. This is from Zen Master Thich Nhat Hanh. He said, don't be idolatrous about or bound to any doctrine, theory, or ideology, even Buddhist ones. Buddhist systems of thought are just guiding means. They aren't absolute truth. So it's understood that the Dharma is a raft that we can use to cross the river of samsara, of dukkha. But it isn't the ultimate truth either. It's just a method, a means. And clinging to anything ultimately is a cause of suffering. So there's that ultimate faith and confidence. Faith is the seed, practice is the rain, and wisdom is my yoke and plow. Modesty's the pole, mind is the strap. Mindfulness is my plowshare and my goad. That's from the Samyutta Nikaya, one of the other suttas. So I'd like to do a little guided reflection here this evening. Just an invitation to kind of come back in more deeply into presence. And it's totally optional if you don't feel like you want to probe deeper right now, and it's best just to stay with just noticing the breath. You could just notice the sound of voice as hearing. But if you'd like to probe a little deeper, then you could listen in. So connecting with the breath and the body sitting, noticing, breathing in, breathing out, just letting the breath come and go, connecting with the body. And so just to notice what comes up in response to these questions. And there aren't any right answers. There won't be a test at the end. So you can just relax. What do we know from our own direct experience about the nature of life, the way life works? If there aren't any thoughts or images, maybe there's body sensations or feelings that come up. What do we place faith in our lives? And if there's any judgments, just letting those go. This isn't about judging. This isn't about commentary. It's just noticing what arises. What comes up? Where do we place faith in our lives? What do we have confidence in? And what do we really understand or stand under to be true? What do we really know from our direct experience to be true? So just noticing how this feels, what comes up, and it's okay if nothing comes up. These are just invitations, little probes. And so just coming back in to centering around the breath, just letting awareness coalesce there, letting this go, this reflection. And check in with yourself and see if there's anything you'd like to share with the group. Is there anything that's come up that you understand or know that's from your own direct experience? And so I just invite sharing if anyone would like to. Of course, it's totally optional.
When you posed, the moment you posed the question, what do you know for certain about life? I had a very my mind just stopped for several seconds, which doesn't happen very often. So it wasn't really something that I know for certain. It was just, oh, nothing. And that was really quite a nice experience. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
First, thank you so much for choosing the five faculties, and especially faith, because that's always been something that I struggled with for a long time. On the reflection, when you also, you know, the certainty, I think it's because of my practice and the study of the Dharma, that there is one thing that I now know with certainty, and that is that I'm going to die. And I don't believe that I would have said that if I hadn't been studying the Dharma. And I think the other truth that really is a truth for me in a world where so many truths have turned out to be lies. I'm 67, and what I learned in school unfortunately didn't turn out to be very truthful. Truth for me really has come down to unlike most things in my life, I have found truth in the Dharma, in the understanding of human nature as revealed in my practice and in my studies of the Dharma. And, you know, 2,600 years ago, the Buddha laid out the psychology of the human mind. And as you said earlier, you know, what science is doing is catching up with what the Buddha taught, which I think is just pretty amazing in so many ways. And so I'm just so grateful, not only for the teachings of the Buddha, but to be able to sit here on a Thursday night and hear you speak, and what you bring in your own interpretation and life experience, gives me faith and hope in a chaotic world. So thank you. I'm very grateful. But I know that the Dharma changed my life. And at a time when I thought, when I didn't understand suffering and I didn't think I could live another day, it also saved my life. Thank you, Doug. And thank you to the Sangha. I'm new to the Sangha, and I'm, although I recognize some people. Hi, Laura. Hi, Charlene. Hi, Betsy. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Maggie. Yeah.
I know from my own experience that love and kindness and emotional connection and relationship make this world bearable. I know that.
One thought that I had when you asked, like, what do I know for certain? It's very not Buddhist, but it was that there are beings that are, like, protecting me and, like, around me. And to me, that makes life bearable, because otherwise it feels so cold and empty, and, like, a lot of times I don't resonate with a lot of the Dharma teachings, which is odd, because I'm into Buddhism, but also I'm kind of not. So I like the teaching, or I like what you said about, like, talking is making me very hot. I like what you said about that, like, it's, I don't know, it's not like it's, I lost my train of thought, but my cat says hi.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thanks for sharing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just celebrate the sharing and, you know, the deep sharing that's happened this evening. And it really is just warms my heart to hear and just to feel your presence here, whether you're speaking or silent. So, and that I have faith in community, this kind of community, where we, you know, wake up together. And so, so it's about time for us to wrap up, and I'd like to close with a practice of metta. And so just an invitation to connect with our loving and wise intention for ourselves and others, and the realization that there really aren't any others, there's just us, that we all belong to each other. So it's within that to notice if there's anything that you'd like to hold for yourself as a loving intention. Yeah. It could be simple, like, I accept myself when fill in the blank, or it could be, may I learn to feel a sense of faith or trust in my direct experience. Or, you can notice what words your heart might long to hear, what you'd like to cultivate. And just experiment, try offering that to yourself, the words that your heart might long to hear. And may there be peace, or may I feel safe, or, And then letting those words be repeated a few times, and let them kind of radiate throughout your being. There's a sense of just planting seeds or watering seeds of kindness. Even if you aren't really feeling it emotionally or energetically, you can still do this practice. It's a wonderful thing about the practice of mindful intention, is that regardless of what state of mind or body we're in, we can plant these seeds. and it's in the fertile soil of this conditioning, whatever we are experiencing. And notice how it feels in the body. Cultivating the garden of the heart. And then to share whatever the fruits are, or maybe it's the vegetables, I'm not sure, but whatever is growing there that's wonderful that we'd like to share it with the world, to share it with our Sangha, with our community gathered here this evening. And if you feel comfortable, you're welcome to let your eyes open and just look around and look with the eyes of loving kindness, compassion, sharing wishes of well-being. May you feel safe. May you be protected. Yeah. May you find faith and confidence in yourself. Those are just some examples. Yeah. Yeah. And we can imagine that we get to stand in a circle holding hands and feeling that connection from hand to hand and heart to heart, and then as a group sending our wishes out into the world to places where we know that there's suffering, people who are under the threat of violence, war, starvation, places where there isn't the kind of freedom that we experience, places where people feel afraid, or whatever comes to mind that moves your heart, and just letting the wishes of well-being, compassionate energy move in that direction. And even if you don't believe that this really does anything out there, notice what it does in here. If we practice, if we just set aside our disbelief and just plant the seeds here, don't have to believe anything. Check it out for yourself. Does this make a difference? Yeah, so sharing our wishes in all directions, to the north, to the south, to the east, to the west, to all beings without exception. And I'd like to invite us to close with a simple chant, may all beings be happy. And we can do that three times. And then sadhu, which means so be it, three times. You're welcome to unmute and join me in the chant. My voice is really hoarse this evening for some reason, probably allergies, so may not hear much coming from me, but you can keep going. So let's give this a try. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. So do, so do, so do. Oh, so beautiful. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for being here. Please take whatever is useful from this evening and continue to practice. Anything that's not, just let it go. So you only take what's good. And be safe and well, and I hope to see you again next week or real soon.
Thank you, Doug.
Yeah,
thank
lots you, of love.
Thank you, Doug.
Yeah. Take care.
Thank you, Doug.
Welcome. Yeah, take care.